Way back in episode 24 of the podcast, I interviewed Dr. John Michaels. He was a former Super Bowl champion that played for the Green Bay Packers and then went on to be a physician. But he started out as a left tackle and as such was charged with protecting Brett Favre's blind side. You know, the quarterback can't easily see what's coming from behind him, so he needs somebody protecting that side. Well, in business and in life, we've got a lot of blind spots. Maybe it's a skills deficiency. Maybe it's a relationship that's on the rocks. Well, whatever it is, it's there. You've got to have people in your corner watching out for you, pointing out those blind spots and helping you shore them up. Now, today's guest is going to talk about some of those blind spots we run into in our business and what we can do to prevent them from wrecking us. Let's kick it. It's not so good right now.
Welcome to the Scope of Practice podcast, where we help busy healthcare professionals learn to manage their businesses successfully and master their personal finances. Now, here's your host, Dr. Brent Lacey.
Hey, y'all. Thanks so much for joining me for the Scope of Practice podcast, where you can get the knowledge and resources you need to grow your leadership skills, your business, and your personal finances. Welcome to episode 73. If you haven't already subscribed to the podcast, please be sure to go ahead and hit that subscribe button right now. Also, don't forget to hit the button at the top of your podcast player to turn on the automatic downloads. That way you can listen to these episodes anytime, anywhere, even if you're in a place that doesn't have good cell phone service. Before we get into the show, let's talk a little bit about this episode's sponsor. Vive Funds is a commercial multifamily real estate firm trusted by physician investors, physician families, and busy entrepreneurs from all over the U.S. Located in Dallas, Texas, and founded by Vina Jetty, Vive Funds specializes in curating conservative passive real estate investment opportunities for investors. Vina brings a dynamic perspective to targeting, acquiring, managing, and operating investment assets using the best time-tested practices combined with cutting-edge technologies. Reach out to Vina and her team at Vive Funds to find out how you can be a successful investor too by creating opportunities for you to build your portfolio. You can find them at drpodcastnetwork.com/vivefunds. Again, that's drpodcastnetwork.com/vivefunds. My guest today is Courtney Durandi. She's a CPA and the founder of TPT Advisors. You know, I tried to do accounting in college and I absolutely hated it. I mean, it's just not fun for me. And taxes are in that same category. I mean, I just despise dealing with taxes. It's frustrating and it's complicated and it changes all the time. But, you know, taxes are a certainty in life and in business, and so I've had to figure out a way to be able to get good at it. Still, it's a major blind spot for me. And businesses can be like that too, with blind spots, right? I mean, things that we're just not good at. Blind spots are inevitable. Well, knowing that, we've got to figure out how to identify those blind spots and figure out ways to work through them. Otherwise, we run the risk of having weaknesses in our business that can eventually unravel everything we've been working for. You know, I'm really excited to have Courtney here to talk about taxes and other blind spots in our business and how to overcome them. This is an important topic for any business leader. So, here is my conversation with Courtney Durandi. Hey, y'all. I am so excited to welcome my guest today to the Scope of Practice podcast. She is a CPA and managing partner of TDT CPAs and Advisors, Ms. Courtney Durandi. Courtney, thanks so much for joining us on the Scope of Practice podcast today.
Thanks for having me, Brent.
Yeah. So Courtney, being a CPA, by the way, can I just say, God bless you for doing that, because When I was in college, I went in as a business major and I was planning on going into business because I always enjoyed writing and I thought, you know, I'm going to go and do business and I'll go into marketing. I'll go into advertising because then I can write for a living. That'd be so much fun. And then I did my first accounting class during my freshman year and I decided, no, I need to not do this. I can do, you know, higher level calculus fine. And I just cannot do accounting. I make doofus mistakes all the time. I move a decimal, I miss a zero, I put a negative instead of a positive. It's just a pain. So thank you for doing the things that I can't. We really appreciate it.
Well, it's a good thing we all have different gifts and abilities, right?
Yeah. Well, now with the work that you do, I know that you're a CPA. You specialize more with like small businesses, nonprofit organizations, things like that. So you work with a lot of medical and dental practices, I would imagine, right? I mean, because we are a lot of small businesses.
Yeah, for sure. Yep. So we have a lot of clients who are, you know, privately owned practices, whether it's optometrists, chiropractors, family practice, different specialties. We have a lot of clients that fit in that demographic, that's the type of practice or industry that they're in.
So I'd be curious, based on your experience, what do you see as the distinguishing characteristics of medical and dental practices compared to some of the other companies that you work with? Are the medical and dental practices making the same kinds of errors and having the same kinds of challenges that other businesses have, so charitable organizations and things like that? Or are there a lot of unique challenges for physicians and dentists when it comes to business?
Yeah, you know, across all different industries, there are a lot of common challenges for the same size and or stage of business. So we work with a lot of privately owned growth stage businesses. We help startups, and we also have a lot of very mature businesses. But we have found that a lot of the challenges that you face are more about the stage of business you're at. If you're trying to grow and scale, or if you're trying to transition and reinvent a mature business, or if you're in startup mode, there's a lot of commonality across the challenges that business owners face. When it comes specifically to medical practices, I think one of the biggest challenges, and this is true of other professional services as well, but it's this transition from being a practicing physician to a business owner. So you learn all about helping patients and, you know, or serving clients if it's in another professional service, but just specific to medical, you learn about that practice. And then at some point, you transition into being the physician owner, and it's like you got a whole new job. And so you have to learn, how do you take what you have learned and what you know from this other aspect of your career and use it along with a whole slew of other skills, or leveraging other people, other employees and outsourced resources, to make that shift from being a practitioner or a physician to being an owner as well. I think that's one of the bigger challenges that we see in medical practices, that transition.
Yeah. And that's a big transition for all of us, because we come out of training having basically been in school or training for the equivalent of 10 to 15 years or more for folks. I think the average amount of time that someone spends to become a doctor after college is 12 or 13 years. I think that's the average. So we're in student learning mode forever. And so all of a sudden you transition to being a leader or being the boss. And yeah, that's a big change. Do you feel like it's common for people to wait too long to start looking for help and start trying to find professionals like CPAs or legal advisors, things like that? Or do you see that people are too much in a do-it-yourself mode, or I've got to take care of everything kind of a place?
Yeah. So a couple of things we typically see. One is the do-it-yourself mode. I think a lot of physicians have that feeling like, well, I can figure this out, or I want to understand it for myself, and then I'll give it to somebody else. But I just need to know and understand this. And so they get into that kind of DIY mode, which a lot of people, I mean, they can figure it out, but they realize they don't like it. You know, it's like, this is drudgery. Like you said, Brent, you know, at the beginning of the podcast, like, you know, bless you for doing this, because I don't like it. So it's not even, sometimes it's about, you know, competency, but a lot of times it's just about passion. It's like, I didn't, you know, get into this to be an accountant. I got into this to be a physician. And so kind of making that transition of, what do you really need to know and understand, and who do you need to have on your team to feel like you've got control over the business aspect without having to do it all yourself. So that's one way we typically see it, is, you know, people feeling like they have to do it themselves in order to really grasp it. The other thing we sometimes see is in an existing practice, when a young physician is maybe becoming an owner and transitioning, a lot of times somebody else, another physician in the practice, has been playing that role. And they understand the financials, they understand the business model, and you kind of take for granted that other owner has always done that. And then all of a sudden they retire and you realize, I don't know anything about this. who can help me? Or do I have to figure this out? Is this a, you know, a whole nother job I have now? Those are probably two most common things that we see.
When we're first starting out in practice, so someone comes out of training and they want to start up their own practice, or they're joining maybe a very, very young practice, or maybe they're breaking off from an existing practice and going to join a practice. Do you think it's important for us to be engaging with a CPA right off the bat? Or do you think that there's some role for us to, I hesitate to say QuickBooks. I'm sure as I say that, you're just immediately cringing. But is there some kind of DIY thing that we can be doing up front? Or do you really think that it's something that it gets complex enough quickly enough that we need to be engaging a professional to help us with accounting stuff?
Yeah. So I think it is very important to have a solid bookkeeper or accountant, whether they're a CPA or an accounting firm, to make sure that you are getting your transactions recorded timely and accurately. That's the foundation for everything else. If you want to do tax planning to try to minimize your taxes, you want to forecast your growth, you want to budget to have a plan for how you're going to reinvest in the practice or use your profits. If you want to do what if scenarios, what if we added another physician? What if we added a specialty? What if we added another location? All of that planning and forecasting and that proactive work is dependent upon a foundation of accurate, timely historical financial information. So you, in order to do all that other stuff, you really have to have somebody doing a good job at that internally that you can rely on. So what we see a lot is that's the problem. Their bookkeeping is a mess. They have someone who just can't keep up, or they're trying to do it themselves and they aren't sure they're getting things recorded properly. And so then we step in and handle the outsourced accounting and that other higher level work. But we do have a fair amount of clients who have a very competent bookkeeper in place who can keep the transactions recorded and the accounts reconciled and up to date. They just don't have the capacity or the expertise to do any of that more forward-thinking work with it. Like, you know, they've got solid financials, but they don't know how to help with budgeting, forecasting, scenario planning, optimizing systems, what if scenarios. And so we come in and work based off of that historical information, but somebody has to have that under control for sure.
So is that something that you think that as physicians, should we be thinking about that kind of thing, that strategic growing, that planning, that tax management strategy? Should we be thinking about that early on in our business, or is that a stage two, stage three kind of thing?
Yeah. So in startup mode for any business or for any practice, the first priority is really around generating revenue, finding your customers and finding out what it is that you're good at and that you can deliver that they need at a price that's profitable to you. So if you're, so at that point, the tax planning is typically not a huge priority if you're not yet making a lot of money. And so having a CPA involved at that point is usually about entity structure, making sure that you've got the right entity in place and that you understand how to pay yourself, how to, you know, handle employment taxes and some of those other things. And really making sure that you have someone who can prepare your tax return accurately and provide oversight to your bookkeeper to make sure that at least annually your books are up to date. But that's in startup mode. Once you get to where you've got that under control and you're moving into growth mode, then having that guidance and advice, not just a tax preparer, not just a bookkeeper, that's where it becomes really important to help you grow and scale your practice, to optimize the profitability of your practice, having that that guide to really help you from a business perspective.
So as we're looking for a CPA, one of the things that I see, we're going to be talking about some blind spots here for practice owners and business leaders here in a few minutes. But one of the blind spots I think that we oftentimes have is that we don't always pay close enough attention or maybe think strategically about who we choose to let into our inner circle, like who our primary advisors are. So as someone who works in the accounting industry, let me ask you, how do we go about finding a good CPA? Like, what sorts of questions do we need to be asking when we're interviewing potential CPAs to come in and work with us to make sure that we're getting the right person?
Yeah, I think one of the first questions to ask is, what is your approach to serving me? What would our relationship look like? So, and if they say, you know, well, once a year, I'll send you an organizer and a list of information that I need, and you'll drop it off and we'll prepare your tax return and we'll call you when it's ready. That's a tax preparer. If you want an advisor, the conversation is going to be more like, we're going to do a lot of listening. We're going to ask you a lot of questions about your current situation and your long-term goals, both personally and for your practice. And then we're going to help you develop strategies to achieve those goals. And we'll work with you all throughout the year to make sure that we are providing information and guidance to help you make decisions to achieve those goals. For some, it's about finding ways to grow their practice and launch another location or launch a specialty. For others, maybe they're moving towards retirement and transition, and they need help getting their practice set up more turnkey and less reliant on them being there, and something that would be attractive to another younger physician to come in and be able to step in and take over because it's running efficiently. So it's really, you know, if they say, we're going to understand who you are and where you're trying to go and help you get there and work with you all throughout the year, that's an advisor versus a tax preparer. So understanding they're not right or wrong, but you should know that there's a difference. And if you're comparing fees, especially the fees for somebody to prepare a return compared to someone who will be your advisor and do tax planning and tax preparation and a holistic relationship with you, it's not really apples to apples. So, but if you just call up and say, how much would it be to prepare my partnership tax return? You might not have the full picture. So I think that's a big one, is what is your approach to serving me? What would our relationship look like?
Well, and your needs can change over time. So when you're first starting out, like you were talking about a few minutes ago, that depending on which stage of the business you're in, you may need just a tax preparer initially while you're just building revenue and just trying to get from day to day and make payroll and figure out who your next hire is going to be and that sort of thing. But then over time, maybe you expand and maybe you eventually expand from tax preparer to an advising CPA to needing a full-time CFO as the practice gets big enough.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think that's a great point. Just understanding what are the capabilities of service. So not necessarily only what I need now, but how could you also help as I grow in the future? That's another great question. I think another one to ask about is, who would be serving me? Would I have one main person who would be doing all of the work with me, or is there a team-based approach? What happens if that person leaves, or if they're on maternity leave? Is somebody else going to know what's going on and step in? That kind of a question I think is good to understand as well as you look for a relationship with an advisor or CPA.
Well, and one of the real values of having an advisor is they can fill in the gaps for you. And like we're going to talk about here in a minute, they can catch you in your blind spots. So when there's an area that you're not catching that you're not seeing because you don't know what to look for, or because you're not paying close enough attention, or you're too busy or whatever, then having a good advisor in your corner to say, hey, you know what? You guys haven't filed your quarterly taxes, your quarterly estimated taxes. You're going to need to do that, or you may be stuck with some penalties next year. So let's get you going. And you may be thinking, oh my goodness, I didn't even think about that. When are they even due? What month is it right now? Right. So having someone that can catch that is really key. What do you think it is about blind spots that makes it so difficult for us to see? Why do we have blind spots? Is it a lack of experience? Is it a lack of knowledge? Is it just that we just don't care? I mean, what do you think it is?
Yeah, I think it's you don't know what you don't know. It's just that as you're working towards things, I think it can be surprising when all of the all of the work you've put in to get to a certain point all of a sudden brings up these new issues and challenges that you're like, what the heck? I've been working so hard to get here. I thought, you know, I've been working the problems all along to get here. And now that I'm here, say at this growth stage, for example, now there's new problems that came about kind of because of all of the growth that I've been experiencing. I think that's what, it just surprises people that when they work so hard, that there's new challenges all along the way. And so just, and not, you know, just, you don't know what you don't know. So I don't think it's that people don't care. I think it's just you kind of get head down working on achieving your goals. And then when you finally achieve them, you have a whole new set of issues or challenges to face.
Well, and that's a really key point, I think. So one of my favorite leadership maxims, one of my favorite business maxims is that healthy things grow and growing things change. And if we are going to be in a growing business, we have to expect and even look forward to, be eager for change. But that's frustrating and it's hard because we're constantly having to learn new things. We never quite are able to get into a comfort zone. Or as soon as we do get into our comfort zone, usually that's when the business starts to decline or something starts to happen or things start to go downhill. I know one of the things for me that's been really helpful is that over the years, I've really tried to make it very intentional and very public and very deliberate that I want my team members to call me out if I'm doing something that is making the team less efficient or making the team uncomfortable, or call each other out and say, hey, you know what, we should be doing something different, or this is a problem that we're running into. We need to figure out a way to solve it. So we're all checking each other's blind spots. You know, it's kind of like the movie Top Gun, right? So you've got your wingman with you, right? So you never want to go into battle alone. You want somebody with you. You know, you've got someone in the back seat who's constantly looking behind you. It's like, where's the missiles coming from? Where's the next dogfighter coming from? And so I feel like for me, having a lot of people constantly watching my back and constantly watching out for me and saying, okay, hey, listen, you're not noticing something, but you know, Susan has been working here for a while and she's just really not making the grade, or you know, she's, you know, Kelly's really having, she's really just not seems like herself lately. I wonder if something's going on at home that, you know, she needs some time off or something like that. And so we're constantly looking out for each other. And I feel like having lots of people watching our backs and checking our blind spots is really important. Have you seen that in your experience as well?
Yeah, for sure. I think where we've seen it show up is almost as kind of an element of hope that, oh, I'm not the only one that has this. I think sometimes that's part of it is we feel like I'm, you know, trying to grow and be successful. So are these issues that I'm encountering mean that I'm doing something wrong or I've messed things up? And because we know these, you know, these blind spots and we can help people recognize that's what's happening and say, this happens to almost everyone. Like at one stage or at one point or another in this growth stage, this is going to happen. It's not you. It's just part of the evolution of growth. And I think that gives people hope, like, oh, I didn't mess it all up. And oh, so you've helped people with this before, you can help me. I think that provides a lot of hope and confidence for business owners and for practice owners.
So I want to go through a few key, really common blind spots that tend to affect physicians and dentists. So I know this is something that you have taught on and that you coach about. And so I'm really excited to just sort of tee you up and just let you go. I want to hear your thoughts on some of these things, because these are the things that I know for me as a physician, one of my biggest blind spots for me is that I tend to not notice it as much when someone's not living up to their full expectations, unless I'm directly supervising them as a deliberate thing. And what I mean by that is that I am so motivated to do a good job and to make sure that I'm doing what I'm supposed to be doing and I'm being really efficient and I'm constantly doing better at what I'm doing, that I tend to sort of assume that everybody is wired that way. And that's not the case, as I have found out, sometimes to my detriment. And so I know that's a blind spot for me. And so one of the things that's helpful for me is that I have learned to develop leaders that work with me and work for me that I can lean on to watch those blind spots and find those areas where I'm not as skilled at picking up problems and recognizing opportunities for growth and change. So I want to give you that same opportunity here is to really coach us on some of these common blind spots that physicians and dentists experience that you've previously identified. So let's start with number one. So blind spot number one, you've reached your limit and you know there's got to be a better way. So what does that mean?
Yeah, so it's kind of what you were talking about, Brent, of you're trying to do everything, or at least you're not leveraging other people to fill in some of the gaps or make sure that other people are doing what they should be doing. So this comes out in some ways, it's like you're just feeling frazzled. It's like you're trying to do everything, this especially early in the growth stage, or if you're in a mature practice that's kind of reinventing itself for a next phase. What you find is that what you had to do to dig in and figure things out early in your practice or in your transition into ownership or leadership, all of a sudden you reach your limit. You don't have the capacity to do all the things anymore. And some of them you don't even like. And so what you want to do is figure out what are the roles and responsibilities within the practice that are yours to do. Where do you, as the practice owner or leader of your specialty area or whatever your role is, where are the things that you make the biggest impact on the practice? And then the other things that you're doing, who else could do those instead of you? Whether it's another employee or an outsourced resource, but you have to really think about what are all the things happening in the practice. What are mine to do? What are theirs to do? So we work with clients to really understand who does what within the organization, what are the roles and responsibilities, and how can we optimize the people you have and the processes you have to make things work much more efficiently and effectively, and to keep everybody working as much as possible in the areas where they have the most passion and proficiency, where they make the biggest impact, and find another home or a way to automate or systematize the other areas that really aren't as valuable for them to be doing or don't produce as much joy and fulfillment for them to be doing.
So I love this. So automate, delegate, or eliminate is basically what you're saying, is we need to figure out a way to what can we offload from ourselves and delegate to other people. Well, that sounds great, but I'm also hearing people in my head. I'm just imagining our listeners saying, "Yeah, but Courtney, I'm not in charge. I'm not the department chair. I'm just a junior employee. I mean, I see things that we could be doing better or different, but who the heck am I?" So, what do you say to people who aren't the ones in charge? How do they start to effect that change when they're not in a leadership role necessarily?
Yeah. So I think the best way when you're not in charge, the best way to sell an idea to your boss is to make the business case for them and make it easy for them to say yes. If it is something that you're presenting a problem and no solution to the boss, that's like a whole nother, you know, monkey you just put on their back, and they've already got plenty. So if you want them to act on this, you have to think through, well, what if I was the leader? What would I do? And do the work and go to them and say, here's the problem I think we're faced with. Here's some ideas I have for what would improve that. And I've thought through a few things we could do to execute on it. And I'd love to, you know, work with you on this or take the lead on this. Because otherwise, if you come to them, it's just another problem for them to deal with. They might even think you have a great idea, but they just don't even have the capacity to do anything about it because they've already got so many things on their plate. So make the business case and make it easy for them and put yourself in their shoes. Because a lot of times that's how you develop into being a leader, is think about not just, oh, they should do this. Well, think about, well, what if it was you? What would you do? Because eventually it will be you. Hopefully, right? If that's your goal. So start thinking and acting like a leader and present those things to your boss. And a lot of times they'll be thrilled that you are taking that initiative and having those ideas and thinking like an owner.
That is so key. That is absolutely critical that we start to put ourselves in the shoes of the people that are in charge or the leaders that we want to be. Bringing them problems isn't going to help. You got to bring solution, or at least a suggested solution. Another thing that I think is really important to consider, especially when you're early on in your career, and I always make this recommendation to my first year medical students, my early interns and residents, the junior partners in the practice, and say, listen, whenever you think you have identified a problem, don't take it to the highest level. Start by talking to someone who is a peer or someone who works for you or someone who is a member of the staff and say, hey, I've identified this thing that I think is a problem. What do you think about that? Because one of the things that I've actually found is that it sort of leads to a variant of that blind spot discussion, which is that you haven't recognized the proper way to do that or a better way to do that. You may be doing it in a way that's less efficient, and you may be the only one and not recognize that someone else has already solved this problem and you're just not doing the solution the right way. So I think it's also a good idea to make sure that you're not the only one that has the challenge, that it really is a system-wide or at least a problem that is affecting multiple people before you bring it up, because that's the last thing you want to do is bring an issue to your leader and yeah, we had 5 committee meetings on this a year ago, and this is the whole system we put in place. Please go do your job and read this thing without bringing me knucklehead stuff like this that we've already solved in the past.
Yeah, I think that's a great point. And you know, something else that kind of along those lines that we see when we work with clients, when this is one of their challenges and we go through this process optimization project where we're interviewing their team members and getting all these different perspectives about how do you do things and what are the issues? We have an outside perspective, so that helps facilitate getting feedback from people in different roles, different departments, different jobs. And then we can kind of synthesize that and see that there's a problem over here and there's a problem over here. And they didn't even realize that they were both, you know, they were causing this problem for each other or that it was impacting, you know, across. And so going through that process optimization project where we're not just trying to, optimize and find efficiencies, we're also trying to synthesize or facilitate different perspectives. Because to your point, sometimes one person thinks this is a huge problem and everybody else has been, you know, dealing with the correct solution for the last 6 months and they just, you know, missed the memo or something.
I love it. Okay, so let's talk about blind spot number 2. I love this one. Your gut feeling for what's happening in your practice is no longer accurate. Well, first off, let me just ask, is our gut feeling ever accurate, or did we just get lucky when we went with quote unquote our gut and it worked? Did we just get lucky, or is there actually some validity to the notion that there are instincts that can help guide us along the way?
Yeah. So, I mean, I think there are absolutely instincts and validity in your gut or your intuition. I think that depends a lot on how much experience and expertise and personal development you've done, depending on what the topic is. the more work you've done, the more you can probably trust your gut. But this blind spot it's kind of about, you know, flying blind. A lot of practice owners have in their mind how they think things are going financially. And then they'll get the financials from the bookkeeper or the accountant and they'll be like, "This can't be right. Like I know in my gut we're making more money than that. Or it can't be that people haven't paid us in that long." Or, you know, they have this feeling for what's happening and then the financials don't match up. And so a lot of times they think the financials are wrong. Sometimes they are. Sometimes your bookkeeper doesn't know what they're doing and transactions haven't been recorded and adjustments are needed. But sometimes, especially in the growth stage, the financials are correct. It's that things have grown so much that you just can't keep a finger on everything that's happening anymore. When it was smaller and you were involved in everything, your gut was probably pretty accurate because you had firsthand involvement in everything going on. But as you grow and scale and you delegate to other leaders, like we talked about in Blind Spot One, as something that's necessary, you start to lose touch with some of the things going on. And so you just can't keep it all in your head anymore. That's not a bad thing. What it means is that you have to have accurate financials and really relevant financial reports that will give you that pulse of what is going on. You have to be able to rely on it, and you have to have it set up in a way that gives you the information that you need to know without you feeling like you have to have firsthand involvement in everything in order to feel like you know what's going on and you're not just flying blind.
Yeah. You know, I will say that I definitely appreciate what you're saying, that, you know, the degree of experience that you have is directly proportional to how accurate your gut instinct is likely to be. So it definitely does not always pan out. One of the things I'm always coaching my students and my residents on is, listen, when you're early on in your training, you need to have a healthy respect for the fact that you don't have the experience to recognize the kinds of patterns that will lead you to be a good diagnostician eventually. So if you ever get a study or a test result that doesn't jive with the history that you took, and you say, okay, yeah, I see this test result, but that doesn't make any sense, trust that instinct, but don't assume that the data are wrong. Go back and talk to the patient and get a better story and see if you can figure out how to reconcile those two. But eventually, as you get better, I can't tell you the number of cases that I've had where, I'll just give you sort of a classic example. I have a patient that comes in with right upper quadrant pain, and I'm very convinced based on how they're presenting that they've got a sick gallbladder. They need to have their gallbladder removed. And so I get an ultrasound because the surgeon wants me to check an ultrasound and it's normal. And I say, no, I really think this is the gallbladder. And they say, well, why don't you get a CT scan? Let's make sure it's not something else. So I get a CT scan and then that's normal. And they're like, oh, okay, well, and I'm like, I still think this is the gallbladder. I think it needs to come out. They said, well, why don't you get a HIDA scan, a nuclear medicine study, and let's see if it's a hot gallbladder on that. And then the HIDA scan comes back normal. And so now I've got three different radiology modality tests telling me that the guy does not have a hot gallbladder, and I just know they're wrong. And so, you know, it takes a lot of experience to get to that point and say to your surgeon, look, I know that I got three tests telling me that, you know, I'm out of my mind, but I'm confident that this person needs their gallbladder out. And then they'll take him to the OR and the gallbladder is just sick as snot, and then they feel better afterwards. So so having that experience really is valuable. But I think recognizing that your lack of experience is going to lead you to a faulty gut, if you will, is probably a very wise approach when you're early on in your practice, and probably a wise approach as you grow in each new stage of your business.
Yeah. I think it comes down to that element of wisdom and experience. And then the other element of just as things grow, you just really can't keep a good handle on what's happening anymore. And so you have to have good systems in place that report to you accurate, timely, relevant results that you can then say, you know, oh, that doesn't look right. Let's dig into it and find out, is there something wrong? Or maybe the financials are right, but this isn't performing the way we thought it would. So what's happening? Are people not doing the job the way we thought that they should be? Or are we not billing it the way we're supposed to be? Like, maybe this isn't in alignment with your gut. Like you said in your example, maybe you know these financials, they don't align with what you think. And it's not that they're wrong, but it's that something isn't working the way that you thought it would. And now you have a tool to bring that to your attention so you can dig into the activities that are happening in the practice, the people that are doing certain processes, and figure out what's not happening the way it should be, because we should be getting these results and we're not.
Yeah, trust but verify is probably a valid maxim to consider here, that, you know, trust your gut instinct, but have some backups, have some checks and balances in places to make sure that you're working off of accurate data, or that you have a backstop. You have someone, like in the case of the financials, you got a CPA that's going to call you out and say, hey, listen, I know you think you're good, but you're a month away from not making payroll. And then, oh my gosh, well, let's figure it out. But having those people in your corner are great. But I think a healthy mistrust of your gut instinct, or at least a healthy recognition of the limitations of your gut instinct is probably wise. I'll tell you what just leaps to mind. I remember I had an attending that told me about a patient one time that he had that she was coming in with a swollen abdomen and discomfort and just felt and was retaining a lot of fluid. And they're going through their evaluation and they're doing the history and they're doing the workup. And then, you know, as you're probably, you know, considering as a likely scenario here, turns out she's pregnant and she didn't really realize it. And so the attending's going through and saying, "Hey, listen, so I guess we figured out the source of your problem, and congratulations, you're pregnant." And the patient says, "No, I'm not pregnant. I don't think that's right." He said, "No, ma'am, I'm hearing two heartbeats. I'm very sure of it." He's like, "No, I can't be pregnant." It's like, "Really? Are you sure about that? How can you be so sure that you aren't pregnant?" "Well, because I don't want to be." Okay, well, that's a faulty gut instinct right there. So I think recognizing our limitations on that is going to be really valuable. So, well, let's talk about blind spot number three. This one I love because I think this really speaks to the idea that we need to be proactive rather than reactive. The best leaders are the ones that can anticipate problems, can see challenges coming down the line. And a lot of this, like you said, is going to be based on experience. But blind spot number three is you're spending a lot of time putting out fires instead of preventing them. So why does that happen? Why are we so prone to being reactive rather than proactive?
Yeah, I think that especially again in this growth stage and in a growing and changing business, like you said earlier, growth is change. They're synonymous. There's so much going on that you can end up spending all your time dealing with whatever the acute issue is today, whatever somebody needs your help with right now. And then you got to move on to the other thing because you've got your own set of responsibilities. And then you're also helping fight all these fires for everybody else within your team, within your practice, that it's hard to get out of that, you know, quadrant one and get into quadrant two, where you're stepping back and saying, what's the underlying issue here? What's happening upstream in the practice? What's happening before this became a problem, before I knew there was a problem? What activities are going on here in the practice that are causing this? And taking time to really focus on those upstream issues and solving them instead of just constantly managing symptoms and never getting to the root cause of the issue.
So I'm fond of the leadership or the, you know, sort of analogy that, you know, the young man who wants to become wise goes up on the mountain and he speaks to this wise man and says, "How do I become wise like you? You know, how did you become so wise?" And he says, "Well, I'm wise because I have good judgment." He says, well, how did you get to have such good judgment?" He said, "Well, I had good judgment because I have a lot of experience." He said, "Well, how do you get a lot of experience?" He said, "From bad judgment." And so I feel like that's something that a lot of times we just have to go through some of those growing pains. But one of the ways that I think we can combat that, and I know you've spoken about this in other interviews, is really leaning on other people and trying to figure out, like you said, what don't you know? You don't know what you don't know. So you need to go ask people, "Hey, what don't I know? What are some of the mistakes that you made when you were first starting out? What are some of the mistakes that people commonly make in my job? What are some areas that you see that I could be doing things better or that the business could be doing something better?" But I think a lot of it comes from leaning on some of those professionals, like you were talking about earlier with the CPAs, or like you're talking about with our team members or our other leaders or our partners or things like that. So really leaning on people to figure out, okay, what are some issues that have come up in the past? What are some things that we are trying to accomplish in the future and really starting to try to address those? But I think a lot of that just starts with intentionality, just starting asking some questions.
Yeah, definitely. I think really putting priority around, we got to solve the underlying issue here. And so how do we do that? We work with clients to help develop these leading indicators. So key performance indicators, KPIs, can be lagging or leading. Lagging indicators are talking about things that have already happened. So all your historical financial statements, your balance sheet, your profit and loss, your cash flow statement, that all reports what's already happened. Those are lagging indicators and they have their place and they can be valuable. But if you really want to impact your results in the future, you have to start capturing the activities that are happening in the practice right now and get visibility around them, include those metrics in your dashboard or your scorecard or the whiteboard numbers that you track. It doesn't have to be fancy, but you have to figure out what are the things that are happening every day right now that drive these results? What are those upstream issues or what are those leading indicators? And start getting visibility around them so you can do something about it while there's still time to change the results. So that's what this blind spot is about, is recognizing that while you're busy putting out fires, nobody's preventing them from happening again. And so you're going to spend all your time and energy just kind of solving problem after problem or symptom after symptom without actually addressing it. And the way around that is to figure out what are the raging fires right now? What are the acute issues? What are our problems? And then dig deeper. What are the underlying activities that happen? So maybe it's a cash flow problem. That's just a symptom. Cash flow problems can be from a number of things. So if that's your symptom, we've got tight cash flow. We're not sure we can make payroll next Friday. You have to dig into what is it about that? Are we not getting paid by third-party payers or insurance companies, or are we not getting our invoices out? Are we having billing errors? And so all of our claims are being rejected and we have to go through this whole cycle again. Like, what is the underlying cause? And then what can we start measuring around those causes to get visibility and fix that issue instead of just keep trying to deal with the symptom?
Yeah. And the definition of insanity is continuing to do the same thing over and over, expecting a different result. So yeah, if we want different results, we got to do different strategies. And I think, like you said, a lot of that just starts with asking questions, having the humility, frankly, to just admit, hey, I don't know something here and I want to learn more. So if people want to learn more from you, then how can people connect to you? Because we sadly do not have enough time to continue going on this for what could be hours and hours, because this has been a fantastic conversation. But if people want to learn more from you, want to learn more about additional blind spots that we need to be paying attention to, want to know more about how do we get our finances in order, you know, when is it time to get to a CPA, and they want to just continue that conversation, how are some ways that people can connect to you?
Yeah. So we have two things really available for your listeners. One is we have a free ebook that goes through all the blind spot content. And so that's available for download. We also have an opportunity for you to schedule a free 30-minute discovery call where I will send you some questions, just real easy 15 questions ahead of time. And then when we get on the call, we will kind of diagnose based on the way you answer these questions. These are some of the blind spots that might be causing you these challenges and what you can do about it, how we might be able to help, or even just without our help, what are some things you can do if you're a DIYer. So either of those options, the discovery call or the ebook, if you go to tdtpc.com/SOP for scope of practice, SOP, then you'll find access to the download and to the discovery call offer, as well as just you can link back to any of the information on our website from there as well.
Awesome. So tdtpc.com/SOP. And I'll make sure to have the link to that in the show notes and the podcast description. I'll make it really easy for folks to find. Well, that was Courtney Durandi. So be sure to go check out that link in the podcast description. You're definitely going to want to connect to her. She, as you can tell, she's got a lot of great things to say. She's got a lot of great content on the website. And so if you want to connect with her, continue the conversation, definitely go ahead and connect up with her. So Courtney, thank you so much again for joining us today on the Scope of Practice podcast. We really appreciate it.
My pleasure. Thanks so much for having me, Brent.
There is no substitute for having people in your corner that can help you shore up your weaknesses. It's like having a warm security blanket. But it takes intentionality and humility to ask for that kind of help. You know, the greatest teams, I think, are led by people who recognize that they have blind spots and continually work on making them better. And it's important that we as leaders model that intention so that our team members look to their own blind spots and ask for help in fixing them. Well, to help you look for those blind spots, I am excited to tell you about this week's free resource, which is a PDF download called The Scope of Practice Reading List. This list is the top 35 books that I recommend for physicians who want to have a more successful career and stronger personal finances. If you can read just one book from each of the 7 recommended categories, you will be in the top 5% of physicians in terms of knowledge about this stuff. So just go to the link in the podcast description below on your phone to download your free copy of The Scope of Practice Reading List today. Just click on the link in the podcast description and you can download that guide for free. Well, thanks so much for joining me on the Scope of Practice podcast today. You can also find all those resources in the show notes at www.thescopeofpractice.com/episode73. That's www.thescopeofpractice.com/episode73, or just click the links in the podcast description. Thanks so much for joining me, and I'll see you next time.
Thanks for listening to the Scope of Practice podcast at www.thescopeofpractice.com.
Before we end, just a quick reminder about our sponsor, Vive Funds. Vive Funds provides unique passive multifamily investment opportunities that they vet and bring to you as an investor. Reach out to Vina Jetty to see how partnering with Vive can help you reach your real estate investment goals at drpodcastnetwork.com/Vive Funds.